I want to read you a brief poem before I start. Sacred Dreams, it's called. The kindest people are not born that way. They are made. They are the ones who have dug themselves out of the dark, who have fought to turn every loss into a lesson. The kindest people don't just exist. They choose to soften where circumstance has tried to harden them. They choose to believe in goodness because they've seen firsthand why compassion is so necessary. They have seen firsthand why tenderness is so important in this world. This is by Bianca Sparacino. So before I begin, I was reflecting back to the first years that I preached here, and I think I wore my official robe and my stole, one of the stoles. And I was reflecting this morning on perspective or perceptions and how that separates the person standing here from the congregation, and how we've moved from that to where we share our wisdom. So as I speak this morning, I'd like you to think what comes to you about what you're learning in this particular story or stories, and then ask you if you would share that just really briefly afterwards. Let's share our wisdom. It's in normal development, a child early on sees in black and white. It's good or it's bad. It's right or it's wrong. But as we mature, hopefully that modulates. And in many, I hesitate to say most, but in a lot of people, that's the case. A lot of people, it's more or less the case. But even if we feel we're somewhat wise or evolved, we do trip up sometimes. And the teacher of my Buddhist Sangha shared a story that illustrates this the other day. He said he has this 90-something-year-old counselor that he goes to just from time to time. And as he walked in, he saw this van outside that had I Love MAGA on the back. Now, I don't know what your thought was, but his thought, as you might imagine, turned to politics. And he went in and he said to his counselor, "How do you work with someone who has such different values from you?" And the counselor said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Well, that van outside that says, 'I love MAGA.'" And she laughed and she said, "MAGA is the name the grandchildren, her grandchildren call her. So this is a sticker from her grandchildren." And it's kind of funny, and I'm bet all of you like me went, "Oh yeah, I've done that," in one way or another. There's so many things I'd like to share about perspectives today, but I imagine you have plans this afternoon, so I'm just going to share a few. And what I'm going to do is do a few very short vignettes, kind of headline things, and then I'll take one and go into more depth in it. Valerie is an 81-year-old woman with mild to medium dementia, whom I've been companioning for about the last month. She has blown away my perceptions of dementia. She's intelligent. She can hold her own in an intellectual or ethical conversation. But don't ask her what she did this weekend, because she won't be able to remember. And she'll just chuckle, and sometimes she'll put her arm around me and say, "I have short-term memory loss." The only real sadness that she has is that she doesn't feel a purpose in her life anymore, because when her husband died and her children took over the business, she lost her sense of what gave her life meaning. Otherwise, she will tell you that she's had a wonderful life, and she comes up with brilliant and appropriate jokes in the moment. I'm really learning a lot from Valerie, and we're becoming friends. And that's a picture of us at the Tulip Festival. She wore her pink jacket one day, and I knew I had one just the same, and I chuckled to myself and said, I bet you someday it's going to happen. We both wear it on the same day. This was the day. She got such a kick out of that. Many of you may have seen the story about a Russian soldier who was captured in Mariupol in the last couple of weeks, and young man, probably in his early 20s, and apparently through the crowd of people, out came a woman with tea and another woman with food, and somebody else came with a cell phone and said, call your mother, she must be worried about you. Makes me tear up. How could war continue if we all acted like that? And I read a story recently about a large mural in a church in Toronto. George, there we go. The minister, Reverend Ann Hines, spoke to Philip Cote, who is a well-known artist in Canada, and said, I want you to paint anything you want, anywhere you want it in the church. She gave him carte blanche. And this is what he came up, and it tells the creation story of the Algonquin, Ojibwe Algonquin people. So surrounding the old stained glass windows that tell a whole other Christian story, now you get this holding by the Algonquin Ojibwe story. The minister reports, it has transformed who we are. It has changed how I preach. If we're not finding connection, we're not finding God. It is a creation story. Whoever is strong writes the story. Those sacred stories up with the Christian story, it all matters, and it teaches us. It has equal authority. It has brought freedom to me, the minister. The artist says, it's a long overdue recognition from the settler population. It's a prophetic time. Those people back then had a prophetic vision of the settlers coming. It would be a hard time. They colonized the land. They imposed genocide. This is about understanding. There are so many stories across the earth. This is the beginning of our story beginning to be heard. And the painting was finished this March, just before the Pope arrived in Canada and made apologies to the Aboriginal people. How will that mural change the perception of those people who sit week after week in the sanctuary? I think it will be profound. And now to what gave me the idea for this sermon. It's a text conversation I had, followed up with other conversations, with a woman called Donna. Well, I'll call her Donna. That's not her real name. She's a 65-year-old woman living off the grid in a double wide in the county. You might make a snap judgment when you see her, as she is heavy, wears long, outdated clothing, and an ill-fitting wig. There are several dead vehicles in her driveway that kind of give her a measure of protection against the world. Her parents and her brother have died, and her family now consists of two cats, six goats, and 21 chickens. And she's dead serious about that. She will not kill a chicken, for example. She lost her farm because she couldn't keep up the payments while she was caring for her dying mother. And the man who was supposedly helping her robbed her blind and took everything. She's afraid of people like him, offering with one hand and taking with the other. This is what started my head spinning. She said in this text exchange, please remember, on my side of the tracks, it's kind of like we're feral barn cats. They struggle and fight for everything they get. They have their friends and their buddies, and they help each other out. But when someone from the other side of the tracks comes along and wants to help them, they're absolutely petrified. And when they reach out and grab them to help, they scratch and bite and claw, even though they're going to have a better life. But they're afraid because they've been hurt so many times. They don't trust anybody or anything. But eventually, with reassurance, kindness, and lots of patience, they do calm down and become happy, loving, mutually productive kitty cats that no longer are looking from the cold, cruel, outside feral cat world into the world they didn't understand. And of course, now they're in a happier and better situation. She continues, "My entire life I had community. People just knew when I needed help and did it. I'm not used to asking for help. In the 3 years after my mom died, I lost the farm. I lost a lot of my community, and then my brother died. I began getting behind. It was just me, and my health was going downhill. How does a person like me fit in? I don't have the clothes, the language. If I spoke in perfect English among my friends, they wouldn't trust me. And please, don't use the word poor or poverty. I like the phrase, people who've had it rough." About 3 years ago, those separating tracks that she talks about were bridged by a member of our congregation who lives near her. She brought her to our fellowship. She helped her in many ways, bringing potable water to her. She doesn't have potable water in her house. She doesn't have a toilet in her house. She has an outhouse. And giving her rides to town to get medicine and food for the animals and for herself. When I asked her what her greatest needs were at the time that I became involved, she listed a new ramp to her house. She'd already fallen through the ramp once. Platforms and lights for her plants in the greenhouse. She's a botanist with a bachelor's degree. And a new chicken house and run. When a power pole on her property rotted out and leaned over, I stayed awake half that night thinking, how on earth are we going to fix that? She said a power pole would be $1,000, and then there's all the money to install it. Well, I called a few friends, and one of them said, "I think we can sister that pole because it had just rotted out at the bottom." So he came and did the whole thing and didn't charge her anything. Another member found out that she needed a repair to her car. Sounded like it was something simple. Had it towed and repaired at a reduced rate when she told the mechanic the situation. It turned out that she hadn't had a running car for 2 years. She didn't want to ask for help. And now, from her chalice circle, she has a retired medical professional who gets her to her appointments, interprets them for her, and helps her to understand what she needs to do. I asked her, "How do you feel about the group at Buff who've been helping?" Because she just told me this story about how fearful people from her side of the tracks were. She responded, "Everybody's been wonderful. A few people are doing it because they think they should be doing it, but everyone's treated me really nice." Donna grew up as a free-range kid. She talks about going up into the hills with nothing but a knife and staying there for days. She has a BA in botany. She's been passionate about saving and propagating endangered species and is an avowed environmentalist. She's an intelligent woman who grew up with a different culture than Main Street folk and thus has a valuable perspective on our world and our lifestyle. Her dad taught her, "Your job on earth is to teach and to learn." Donna summarized, "Just because people have it rough doesn't mean they're an inferior human being. Being poor isn't just an experience of having less wealth than other humans. It instead comes attached to assumptions, narratives, expectations, and stereotypes. Stereotypes of who you are, what you're capable of, and what you're worth to society. Is the poor person eccentric? That would be Donna, I think. Are they maybe a creative genius? You may know some of these. Do they have a mental disorder? We probably all know someone like that. Are they drug addicts or alcoholics? Are they broken adults from abusive homes? Are they humble people who simply live simply in order to donate money to important causes? In fact, there are many people who are economically poor, but emotionally wealthy, and vice versa. Just saw this a couple of days ago. He's a Canadian taxi driver named John McClellan. He left $1.68 million to a local hospital in his will. He spent 63 years as a taxi driver in a town in Nova Scotia and lived frugally to be able to leave behind the largest single donation in the hospital's history. So not everybody who's poor is a loser. Like women and people of color, people who've had it rough have to work much harder than the typical middle-class person. For example, Donna's septic field is broken. She can't afford to have it fixed, so she uses an outhouse. And her comment was, "What's the problem? Lots of people use outhouses." She washes her clothes by hand. She lives in a neighborhood where her life has been threatened. She carries in drinking water. And on about $1,000 a month of disability payments and food stamps, there's no room for saving money. I can go to Costco and buy one of those big batches of toilet paper to save money. She can't afford to do that. She doesn't run in circles where people open doors when she asks them, although being in our fellowship has resolved her problems because people have become aware of some of her needs. But she can't just pull herself up by her bootstraps. She's had her property stolen. She didn't have the savvy to understand what was happening until it was too late. She lost her family. When her car broke down, she didn't have the self-confidence to ask. And now she deals with multiple health problems, one of which is passing out unexpectedly from hemochromatosis. She told me a couple of weeks ago she passed out on the road, and when she came to, she thought, oh my God, I could be run over. Too many losses can break the spirit, but interceding with care, consistency, and compassion, dosed with a lot of patience, can change a life. I noticed when Donna first came, she sat at the far in our sanctuary, the way into the sanctuary is way at the back. She sat right back there by the door. And when we went to coffee hour, because she came with her friends and they would go to coffee hour, she would stand in the corner by herself unless somebody approached her. And it made me smile when I saw her last week. I couldn't find her. She wasn't anywhere near the door in the sanctuary. She was somewhere up in the middle of the sanctuary. And when we went down for coffee hour, she was sitting at a table talking with a group of people. Our perceptions of her have changed, and she is changing us. It took time and patience to listen, to share resources for problem solving, being respectful of her priorities and goals that allowed her to trust us and see and allow us to see her as the three-dimensional person that she is. Barbara Marks Hubbard, spiritual leader and author of several books, the latest being Conscious Evolution, Awakening the Power of Our Social Potential, said, "You move evolution forward by bringing people together. Being open to different perspectives opens doors." May we all be movers of evolution too, by coming together, inviting others to be together with us, and opening those doors.